This episode is brought to you by Windrose Recovery, a family of premier addiction treatment programs in southeastern Wisconsin. Privately owned, Windrose Recovery offers a full continuum of personalized care for those struggling with addiction, including the Manor for residential treatment, Midwest Detox for inpatient detoxification, and Windrose Counseling for outpatient treatment. With highly personalized treatment focused on trauma, Dr. Chantal Thomas and her expert team offer an authentic experience, creating the kind of deep emotional change that's crucial for long-term recovery. If you or someone you love is struggling with addiction, call Windrose Recovery at 414-409-5300. You can learn more about Windrose Recovery by clicking the link in the show notes or by visiting WindroseRecovery.com. Thank you for listening to The Path to Authenticity. My name's Tom Gentry. I think of this show as the opposite of small talk. You'll hear real conversations with real people who know who they are. We talk about what makes them who they are, how they became who they are, and how we might become truer expressions of who we are.
This is Mark Sefton, and this is The Path to Authenticity.
In the Santa Monica Mountains, Her Escape Vortex offers a unique and truly fantastic setting for your next spiritual retreat. The Lavender Garden, the fire pit overlooking the Topanga Canyon sunset, and the Moroccan-furnished yurt on this magical property provide the atmosphere for an inspiring and transformative experience. A sacred place ideal for yoga and wellness retreats, as well as cleansing and healing ceremony of all kinds, Her Escape Vortex is part of a community of people eager for personal and spiritual growth. Visit thepathtoauthenticity.com/Her Escape Vortex or click on the link in the show notes for more information. If this is your first time here, thanks for checking it out. If not, thanks for coming back. I'm Tom Gentry, and this is The Path to Authenticity. Episode 129 for June 22nd, 2021. Halfway through this year already, it's hard to believe. So this episode features a conversation with Mark Sefton. He's a writer and a podcast host. He also is ever present on Clubhouse, and he's one of the first people I've met there. So I know I've been talking about Clubhouse quite a bit lately. If you've been listening to the show, I recorded this episode there. So if you're not familiar with Clubhouse, you'll hear some beeps that might sound strange, but if you are, you'll know that's someone new entering the discussion. So I did it live on Clubhouse so people could listen in, and people did the whole time. We did a little Q&A at the end. It was cool. And so the full version of this discussion with the Q&A at the end is available on the Patreon page. So you can become a patron and access supplemental content like that for as little as $1 a month at this point. So I made that discussion available on Patreon right after it took place. This episode was available on Patreon right after I completed it, which is about a week before the release date. I also do a little short episode for patrons only that comes out on Saturdays. So I bring it up because I can use every little bit of support to keep creating content like this. I want to be able to devote more time to this. And so if you're listening to this and you really enjoy the show, take a look at the Patreon page, patreon.com/thepathtoauthenticity. I'll leave a link in the show notes. as well as ways to learn more about Mark. So, it's been a while since I've had a guy on the show, so I moved Mark up ahead a couple weeks before a couple other interviews that I'd done prior to this. So I wanted to mix it up a little bit. I have some other guys I'm working on and have some good episodes coming up for you all. So I hope you enjoy it. Here you go. Mark Sefton. It's funny, I don't know if you know this, but so Gina Maffa, who's a psychotherapist in New York City, was a guest of the show a while back, and she works her tail off. So we've kind of developed this friendship over the course of the last several months, and I got a push notification saying that she was in a room at 8 a.m. on Easter Sunday, and I texted her saying, you know, what the hell are you doing on Clubhouse at 8 o'clock on Easter Sunday? And she pulled me up on stage. So before that, I had never spoken on Clubhouse. And you made me feel very welcome right away. And I kind of picked up on that you did a really good job of moderating rooms. So I made a decision to come, not only because I enjoy the subject matter, but because I felt like I could learn from you in the way that you do it. Because if I was going to moderate rooms, I wanted it to be professional, you know? So I appreciate that from you. And so how did you get into Clubhouse? What was your first introduction to Clubhouse?
Yeah, that's a good question, you know, because I think I downloaded it in December, and I don't think I really used it until February. In fact, I was going through my phone today, just clearing some space, and I saw my first Clubhouse room, which was with my friend Ashley Ben Dixon. I think it was something like the 5th of February. And we had five people in the room. I remember that because I always tell people now, you know, when they're starting their own rooms, you know, whether you've got five or 5,000, you know, you've still got to deliver the same energy and enthusiasm, you know, and all you have to do is change one life and then the world can change by default. And so I downloaded the app. I found out about Clubhouse through my friend Rachel Pedersen. Rachel is an incredible digital marketing whiz in the States, and she's really incredible, actually. And she posted about Swink, and I was like, what's this? I'd never heard of it. But I was always very mindful from reading Gary Vaynerchuk's book, Crushing It, when he talked about the next social media platform to go all in on. And so I'd already made a decision. The next one that kind of seemed to have some kind of resonation with me, I was going to go all in. And so when I downloaded the app, it was on an invite only, as we all know. And I think within 2 minutes of me downloading the app, my friend Katie in New York, she approved of me. And then I kind of didn't really understand it so much until I invited Ashley, and Ashley's the sort of girl that kind of just, she's really good at helping sharpen me. She's like, come on then, let's create a room together and let's just see what we can create and see how it works. So that's how it all started for me. And here we are now.
So obviously you see it as an opportunity to broaden your career. So tell me about that. How does this fit into what you were doing before?
Yeah, do you know, I think the byproduct of something like Clubhouse, of course, I think it plays as a strategic way to help other people find out who you are and what you do. But if I'm honest, I've already said in other rooms that I feel like Clubhouse saved me. And I don't think I can actually say that it was so much about a marketing strategy as a way to sell more books or get more clients. Is actually, for me personally, it was the fact that because we've all been facing this pandemic around isolation, you know, not being able to do everyday things, Actually, it was Clubhouse just having the ability to speak to people and hear their voice and build a rapport and build connection and relationship, which has been very much the reason why I keep showing up. And yeah, the natural byproduct of that is the fact that, sure, I've done more podcasts and I'm obviously doing this one with you, Tom, because of Clubhouse and through people that I either knew already or through new people that I've connected with. And the beauty of it is the fact that I've also have seen within my own network, people are also doing those things through my introduction of them, or whether it's me hosting a room and then people just connect because of a room that I've been holding space for. And then everybody's benefited. So, you know, for me, I think there's more of an innocence, if I'm honest, rather than me being clever and smart with Clubhouse. But the fact that it feels like a win-win, that it feels like my life is nourished as well as nourishing other people's lives. For me, I prefer that anyway, because there's nothing worse when you connect with somebody and they just vomit what they do and they're off, they're all over you, and there's no context of relationship. And for me, this is the best social media app there is out there in terms of engagement, opportunities. Actually, the ability to change lives, you know, is incredible through this app. More than any of the others that I've built. I mean, Twitter, I've got, I think, 14,000 followers on there, you know, and I don't get half, not even a quarter of the engagement that I get on Clubhouse. Clubhouse is so beautiful because you get that dialogue, you get that engagement, and it's real. You know, you can't hide like you can on other social when it's your voice. Yeah. You know, you can tell when people are sincere or not, or whether they're just full of hot air and ego. So, yeah. That would be it for me.
Social media, they can be pretty toxic. And one of the things I like about this, the fact that it's the human voice. I mean, it's either you're real or you're not here or you're about to get run out, right? And even lately, I've seen other, you know, like celebrities on social media who are posting things and people taking shots at them, saying nasty things to them in the public square. And I just think this sort of eliminates that. I haven't seen anything ugly in my experience yet. I mean, I'm sure there's the aberration here and there, but generally it seems like you really have to show up and be genuine if you're going to engage in this.
Yeah. I mean, for the most part, I think I've done over 220 rooms now, Tom. Since February, I've had three incidences that have been negative on Clubhouse, but the majority have been very uplifting. And the good thing about, I think, Clubhouse is that they do really respond to abuse pretty quickly and seem to have a non-tolerance kind of approach. It has been really positive, and I've really enjoyed the engagement, the conversation, you know, and what it can bring, you know, a human life, let alone, you know, the whole business side of Clubhouse.
So how long have you been doing the One Thing Room, and how did that come about?
Yeah, so the One Thing Room, which is one of three clubs that I have, Tom, as you probably know, One Thing's been going, I think it's about 10 weeks. I started it as soon as clubs became available. I actually put in the request for One Thing before they kind of opened it up and actually said you can now create a club within the app. And as soon as that was available to me, I knew what I wanted to call it. I knew the essence of it. And I don't know why, I seem to have a really good sense and ability when it comes to naming books or articles or little phrases. I've always seemed to be able to articulate what the essence of what I want to achieve is in a sentence. And I knew that just from observing a few of the rooms, and when you look at the things that you don't like, you know, because I've been into rooms, and I must admit, I'm hardly ever in anybody else's room now. 95% of my presence on Clubhouse is holding my own rooms, and I do jump into a few others. But when I examine and listen, you know, often there's some things that I don't like. I don't like the fact when, you know, majority of the stage is moderators, like, and I'm talking 30 moderators, you know, I think maybe 14 is probably the max that I would feel that is kind of a good mix, you know, and you see people like talking a lot and kind of not being concise. And I thought that if I create something called One Thing, where everybody gets a chance to share, it will also help people stay on track. And even now, I still have to manage it a little more tightly because some people will share three or four things, and it is hard because I think I could have a club called 10 Things for sure, and we could do the same thing, but it would take 10 times as long. But the essence really was to be able to look at different topics where I could have as many other people be a part of it, over topics or passions that either I feel I have a real good knowledge of, or things that I enjoy, or actually sometimes things that I know that I could learn and grow in. And there has been a couple of rooms where I've hosted a room with a good understanding, but actually after the room, I definitely felt like I was the student and not the teacher. And one of those rooms, I think, was about ego, which I thought was really fascinating, because my idea of ego was maybe a little different to what other people felt. So that was kind of interesting.
So have you ever written headlines?
I mean, I have written headlines in terms of radio, because I did radio for 6.5 years, and I have wrote a number of like press releases for myself and other people. So I think that probably the most headlines I write is when I'm writing for Entrepreneur, or whether I'm coming up with titles and chapters for my books. I must admit, I find writing books quite easy. I did write a whole article on Entrepreneur of how to write a great book for people that may, because there's a lot of people, I think, now more than ever, because we've got so much time, are interested in writing their own book. So if people search, you know, Mark Sefton, how to write a great book with Entrepreneur, it'll come up on Google.
So when did your journalism career start? How did that come about?
Yeah, it's cool, actually, because I always believe that your gifting makes room for you, Tom, and it always comes out of service. And I know Zig Ziglar said, you know, if you help people get what they want, you'll always get what you want. And you have to do that in an authentic way rather than a manipulative way, because that's my concern with thoughts like that, because then you know that are people really doing this genuinely, or are they actually being strategic? And when I first started my own business, it was as a hospitality consultant, because my background was hospitality, and my foray into entrepreneurship derived from my grandfather, who was a serial entrepreneur and would deliver fruits and vegetables to the local restaurants, pubs and hotels. And actually, I live quite close to one of the ones that we first delivered to, which was the Chesford Grange, not too far from where I live. And I understood the premise of entrepreneurship from my grandfather, which was really to solve a problem. That's the essence of any business, is your ability to solve a problem. And I noticed that reputation was the most important ingredient when it came to business. And my grandfather had such a good reputation with regards to that. When I started off in my own business, hospitality consultancy business, I went to a lot of networking events, and there was a guy there called Tim. And Tim was sharing a vision for a radio station that he wanted to create. He realized, having worked in the BBC, that a lot of media these days isn't even, you know, news anymore. It's just negativity. And he wanted to promote the local city, capturing positive news, positive stories, people that are really making a difference. So I loved the essence of that. I thought, wow, that's so refreshing, because I've really stayed away from media for the good of my own mind. It just feeds you nonsense and fear and doubt and worry. So I liked the idea of having something that had a positive disposition to it. And so he started to share his vision, because I knew a lot of people, especially in hospitality and in the business world. I just started to connect him with some designers who designed the logo. I did some practical things to help get the radio station up and running. And then he said to me a few months in, he was like, Mark, we'd love to have you on the board of directors or have your own show. And I thought, you know, I really don't want to necessarily be on the board of directors, even though it sounds cool, because I'm literally going to have to share my ideas with 12 other people. And if I don't get my own way, it's just going to frustrate me. So I just thought, you know, there's two real big passions at that point in my life, which was sport and business, in particular football, soccer. And I decided that, you know, I didn't want to take the enjoyment away if I had to work, like going to events and broadcasting. So I decided to create a radio show called Talk Business. I came up with the name. I came up with the concept of just interviewing creatives, entrepreneurs about their human side as well as their business, and just have a 2-hour show once a week where I'd have between 2 and 4 guests. And I did that for 6.5 years, and that kind of really coincided with me pivoting away from hospitality to working specifically with entrepreneurs, and especially around self-leadership. So it really kind of came at a good time for me, but it came out of my heart just to serve and help.
So where does the writing come in? I mean, so you've been a audio journalist for, or a radio journalist. Then when did you sort of make the transition into print?
Yeah. So interestingly, I was producing YouTube videos and I've never taken any of them down. It's quite funny, some of my YouTube videos, when I look at them now, because first of all, it looks like I've just been born, which I think is hilarious, because there's no stubble or anything on my face.
You got a pretty young face anyway, Mark.
Yeah, it's not too bad, but I am 39, so it's probably about right for my face. And yeah, I was producing YouTube videos, and it was an entrepreneur that came across them and said, actually, Mark, we really like what you're producing here. We'd like you to write what you're sharing. So I was like, okay, that sounds good. What a great opportunity. So I started to write, and after a few articles, that kind of gave me the confidence to write my first book, which I did, Inside Job, and then things go from there. It's interesting, isn't it, how sometimes we kind of are looking for the front door, but sometimes it's through the back door that you get the opportunity. So, you know, for me, I always think you just got to do what you love. And people are attracted to people who know who they are and what they're about. And you'll find that the opportunities will present themselves to you. I mean, it was the same when I went from radio to TV. Two ladies who owned a TV network in the States, they came across my radio show. They called me up and they said, we want you to host a show on our channel. And I was like, great. And then I transitioned there. So when you do what you love, people do pay attention, and then you find that the opportunity presents itself.
You know, it's funny. I always loved radio as a kid, and I had in my head that I wanted to be a radio personality. And I went to a high school where we had a station, and I was involved in that. And at one point, I had taken a journalism class, a news writing class, and long story short, I had this teacher stop me in the hallway one day and pull me into his classroom, and I said, what are you doing? And he said, you're going to be a sports writer. And I said, no, I'm going to be on the radio station. And he said, okay, well, you know, as long as you're doing something in the media. And so long story short, in that spring, there was a thunderstorm that a lightning strike hit the tower, the radio tower, and in the fall, they hadn't replaced it. They didn't have the money to replace it. So I went on to be on the school newspaper, which eventually led me to covering high school sports for a couple daily newspapers in my adulthood. But then now here, I'm doing this. It's come full circle. And I think you're right. I think if you're doing what's in your heart, you're going to find the right people, and opportunities are going to present themselves as long as your heart's in the right place, right?
Yeah, I totally agree. I think that when you're true to yourself, and when you realize that some of the things that you have gone through are for the sake of then serving other people in years to come, I feel like that's where, like you said, things come full circle. You know, and I really believe that your gifting does make room for you. And I think the desires that we often have in our heart are not by accident. It's because we've been designed. We've been humanly designed by God or universe, whoever you believe in. For me, it's God. And, you know, I believe in like a creator God. So, you know, for me, just like an eagle, how it is designed, like the wingspan and its body form, it's designed to soar above the wind, you know. And so for me, it there's no it's not by coincidence that an eagle desires to do that because of its very design. And I often think that the desires we have within us are because we are designed to actually bring that into fruition. And we have to believe and we need each other to kind of create that space because sometimes we don't even see it in ourselves, you know, and I think that's really important that we do see in others things that they may not see in themselves, and we call them out and we realize that the greatest opportunities in life are not out there in the world. You are the greatest opportunity. You know, when people say, you know, Mark, just got to get in the flow, I say, you are the flow. You know, it's not so much about finding it, it's about being it.
Well, you know, that's the whole reason I do this podcast, is to talk to people who've done what you're doing, to show other people that it can be done. You can be who you are and do what you want to do, because so often we undermine ourselves with our internal dialogue. The things that we want, we tell ourselves all the reasons why we shouldn't. Either we won't make money, or we can't do this, or we can't do that. And you know, we have the answers. But sometimes a lot of times, I think people, you know, they talk themselves out of having the lives that they want. And then to me, it's no real surprise that so many people are miserable. You know, they have no sense of meaning or purpose. So I'm all for the idea that we have the answers.
It's true. We are the answer as well, Tom.
So tell me about the book you're working on now.
Well, the book I'm working on now is with the publisher. And so I'm actually chomping at the bit. I'm kind of saying to them, come on, the world needs this book. You know, I've given a lot of myself. It's very poignant. It's very purposeful. It's very intentional. And it's a book for men in particular. I wanted to create a resource and also just help men be better men. And so I wanted to talk a little bit about the expectations and responsibilities of being a man. I wanted to talk about man's emotions, what they are, why we feel them, and how do we express them. I also wanted to challenge men on the way that they treat themselves, but also women. So I wanted to take on, you know, some of the things that I've cringed over by being a man and listening to the way that men speak specifically about women. And I kind of really wanted to get inside people's heads a little here and really help men see what a real man looks like, because the world needs men to know who they are and to stand in that masculine energy in order to bring out the beautiful feminine energy that's within women. And so I talk a lot about actually the beautiful differences between the sexes, because, you know, the world's gone mad with equality. Now, I believe 100% that if a man and woman does the same job, they should be recompensed equally. So I believe in that equality. But I don't believe that men and women are equal, Tom. I believe we're beautifully different. There's things that women do way better than men, and I'd be a fool to try and stop a woman from doing that. And likewise, you know, I think there's things that men are way better at than women, and women need to do themselves a favor and let a man be a man, and we need to let a woman be a woman. And we've got to come together now, and we need to create a symphony, which is what I believe is the right order of the male and female species.
So this is right in my wheelhouse, stuff I talk about all the time. So what led you to this subject matter? Was there anything that happened in your life that brought this to the surface?
Yeah, I mean, I must admit, it's not for divorced men, this book, but I talk about some of the pains and struggle and the journey of going through a divorce from a male perspective, because you'll find there's lots of groups, there's lots of literature, there's lots of magazines for women when it comes to going through these things, but very little for men. If I think of magazines for men, you've got Men's Health, and outside of that, you know, obviously you've got all the sports ones and all that, but in terms of actual men navigating through some of the difficulties in life, there's nothing. You know, and for me, it was as much about, you know, I find when I write, I always write from my own perspective. So a part of that's kind of my own self-healing. When I write, I heal a little, I process. But I also know, as I've always said, that none of us can lead anybody away from a place that we haven't been ourselves before. And so when I go through pain and heartache, I know that that pain and heartache can actually encourage and support and show somebody else. And so I wrote it through the lens of my divorce, of wanting to just get really real and say, this is what it feels like. This is how it felt. These are some of the emotions that I was feeling. This is how I navigated through. This is how I tried to find courage. This is how I tried to find healing. This is how I kept cool, just continue to be responsible and honorable, especially to my children's mother, you know, and just, I just really wanted to, create a book that would really engage with men who really struggle to be able to understand their feelings, let alone express them. Mm.
That was a huge turning point in my life too, and where I started to really look closely at this stuff, basically how I was showing up or not showing up as a man, and how I ultimately undermined my marriage, because so many of the interactions, I was coming from a place of fear, you know, fear of rejection or fear of abandonment. You know, I hadn't worked through everything. And then it's funny because I work in the helping profession. My ex-wife is a therapist. So we knew all these therapists, and we'd seen a sequence of several. And finally, after several years, I said, you know, we need to get a new therapist. And as long as it's someone neither of us know. And so I said, you know, I'll see whoever you want. And she found a guy, and he helped me see this stuff. He helped me see how passive I was being, not only in my marriage, but in my life. You know, I wasn't taking an active role, and I was hiding behind this mask of being an accommodating man. I will do whatever you want. You know, we'll eat wherever you want. When really I didn't have the courage to assert myself. That's really what was happening. And so because of those inadequate boundaries, you know, I mean, when we don't have boundaries with people, they run roughshod over us. And so I began to change. And then when I began to change, the marriage wasn't going to survive that. And I just kind of dived headlong into this work ever since then. And I use it all the time in my work with clients, not only in addiction, but also codependency. And really, I think if you boil it down to what actually happens is that we lose ourselves in relationships. And if I am not being myself in a relationship, how can anyone really love me? So a lot of times the guys that I work with, that's the first thing. Well, what are you doing that you enjoy? And then usually you owe nothing, you know? And then, you know, working through those things, and you got to improve your relationship with yourself. And then that is, you know, all our other relationships are reflections of that relationship. So I love that you're doing that, and I look forward to your book. What else you got on the horizon, Mark?
Yeah, I mean, for me, it's like people say to me, you know, what have you got in 3-5 years? Honestly, the magic is always in the 12 months. And for me, there's aspirations, there's things that I think about that I may go after or want to achieve in 3 or 5 years. But I've done all that over the last, I don't know, 12 years of working on myself and working with clients. I've done the 3 and the 5 year plan and goals, but I tell you, the magic's always in the 12 months. It's always in the not too distant future for me. And so for me, I feel like I've got everything lined up. So, you know, we've talked about some of the things here. You know, I write for Entrepreneur. I'm Brains Magazine Ambassador. So I look for other writers as well. I host their podcast. You know, I have a TV show called One More Round. I write books. You know, I've been mentoring entrepreneurs for the best part of 10 years. I've kind of created the life that I want, where my growth will be, on what stages that I appear. So what events will I continue to MC on. You know, I've done some good local events and national events, and I have done a couple of international, but growth would probably see me maybe on more influential stages. And then in terms of writing, I think Entrepreneur is one of the best actual media outlets for writing. A lot of the other big magazines, you have to pay for the privilege, you know, which for me, I don't know. It depends on whether you're paying to write or whether you're paying to market yourself, position yourself. So I know every magazine in particular has a difference of how it goes about that. But I think my growth is really on the people that I get to influence and how many people I get to influence and on what stages. So maybe not so much about me doing anything different to what I am now. But for example, I'd love to get on mainstream TV rather than just being on Apple TV and, you know, some of the other Roku networks and things. That would be a good progression. But I see my progression, yeah, more in terms of the stages and who rather than what.
So where exactly do you live, Mark?
So I live in a place called Royal Leamington Spa. So it's right in the heart of England. So it's right in the centre. It's about an hour and a half north of London. It's a little further north than Oxford. It's not as far up as Birmingham, but it's a beautiful county. It's the county of Warwickshire. I mean, that is definitely a silver lining, being locked down with beautiful surroundings. For the most part, I have great neighbours and a beautiful community. And because I walk every day for an hour and 20 minutes, I've got to know probably about 20 people on that circuit that I see every day. You just say hello. It just feels very, very warm. And your environment is something that's so important when it comes to development, comes to happiness, comes to impact. You know, environment of where you live and where you dwell is so important. It's really you've got to have a peace about where you live, and you've got to enjoy it. And for me, Leamington is quite affluent. It really fits with, like, I guess, my standards of living. I like to be sophisticated. I like class, but I'm not a snob. I involve everybody, as you probably have gathered, but I do like quality, and I do like being in an area that's clean and inviting.
Now, you lived in the States as well, right?
Yeah, I lived in Michigan for a time, and I've been to 15 different states, and my two favorite cities in America are Chicago and Austin, Texas.
Good choices.
I love those two places.
What is it about those two places?
Chicago, I have three loves, and they embody them massively, which is I love jazz music. I know New Orleans is obviously the place for jazz, but I mean, Chicago has real good jazz. I love tacos, which, again, I think I'm right in saying there's more Michelin star chefs in Chicago than any other city in America. I think I'm right in saying that. The food there is phenomenal. Like, I had some tacos in the West Loop. Oh, it was unbelievable. Like, seriously, really good. And then the third thing, which again they excel at, is ginger beer. Love ginger beer. Beautiful. So those three, I'll tell you what, so good, the ginger beer in Chicago.
Is there a brand? Because I like that stuff.
I mean, my favorite one actually is Australian, which is Bundaberg. I love that one.
I've had that.
I've got two in my fridge at the moment, and my cousin in Australia always teases me, like, because they get them in like 24 cases. Here in England, you only get to buy one, and it costs the earth.
Well, Bundaberg's pretty stout, right? I mean, that's good stuff.
It's tasty. It's tasty, yeah. And then Austin is really, but it's a little hotbed of entrepreneurship. Mm-hmm. I spoke during South by Southwest, and that was an absolute nutty occasion. Wow, like, that place was just insane. But I mean, if you love music, you love film, and you love entrepreneurship, it's a fantastic event. And I was just super impressed by all the creativity. Good climate as well. I remember it was March, and it was like 90 degrees, and I was thinking, grief, this is incredible. And just good people, and it has a It has some nice, you know, natural springs as well, not too far. And so it kind of has a bit of everything, you know, and it's the place for the Formula One in the States. And great music, great people. And actually, I kind of came up with my name Plot Twist from when I was in Austin, Texas. And I talk about that story in the book of how I got the name when I was in Austin, Texas. Yeah. And a couple of chapters actually within Plot Twist, because I was speaking at Hanger, which is the largest company that makes prosthetic limbs. So it made the dolphin tail for the film. So I was speaking there and met some awesome people. I had my own little private event as well. Yeah, love that place.
What about Nashville? Have you been to Nashville?
No, I've never been to Nashville, Tennessee. I would love to. I've got a couple of friends there. I mean, I think I've got friends pretty much everywhere. And it makes me laugh, actually, because the amount of people that have invited me to come and stay with them while the UK has a travel ban, I just think it's quite funny, Tom. I've been invited to every continent in the last 6 months, and a lot of it's come through Clubhouse. People are like, Matt, come speak, come see us, come do this, come do that. And I'm like, we're under a ban. Like, you're rotten. It's funny.
Yeah, well, if you like Austin, you'd like Nashville too. I mean, the music there is just incredible.
Yeah.
And it's not just country music. Great food. I mean, and it's described as a big city with a small town feel. It very much feels like a family place too.
I'd love to.
Easy to get around.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, what about Florida? You've been to Florida?
Florida, I've been a lot, especially as a kid. Went to Disneyland, did Orlando, did Universal Studios. I did all that stuff. I have a funny story of when my dad and his friend and I, we traveled to Orlando, and I was kind of seeing a girl from Georgia, in Thomasville, Georgia. And I got a Greyhound bus from Orlando, Kissimmee, Orlando, up to Tallahassee, the northern part of Florida, and then she was going to pick me up from there with her mum, because it was just a 45-minute drive over the border. And oh, that Greyhound bus was one of the most terrifying experiences of my life. I mean, I got on the bus, and I tell you what, there was two men at the back of the bus, right? They were beaten up black and blue, and one of them was holding a gun. And I was like, I'm 18. I'm thinking guns are illegal in England. This is like, I'm like, I don't even know if I want to get on this bus. And then a nun comes on, and then a mum with a kid, like a kid. And then there was some other riffraff that ended up coming on. We had such a mix of like the world's best and the world's worst people all on this Greyhound bus. And here's me. I literally held my bag for the whole 8 hours on my lap. When people could get off to go to the bathroom, I just sat still and I just waited and waited until I got off. And I tell you, as soon as I got off that bus, oh, I felt like I'd escaped a bullet. I really did.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, buses, if your parents knew what a bus trip was like in the United States, they probably wouldn't have let you go.
Yeah, it's probably true. It was.
And that's a long drive from Orlando to Tallahassee, maybe 10 hours. Something like that.
Yeah.
Florida's a big state.
Yeah, it was. I mean, I went through a lot of Florida, like Jacksonville, and yeah, I saw a lot of it, but like I said, I've been to 15 states so far, and I've not really been over to California. It's all been East Coast stuff and mid town. Yeah, so.
Well, I grew up about 3 hours from Chicago in Indiana. So it's a nice place to come from. The people are there are really, really nice.
Yep.
But I've been in, I'm about an hour north of Miami in West Palm Beach. I've been here for almost 25 years, but.
Nice.
If I had a magic wand and could be anywhere, it would be California. I mean, it's so beautiful. It really, and it's everything, you know? You can, like here, I talk about how you can look out at the ocean. The ocean's beautiful here. But imagine turning around and then seeing a mountain range on the other side. It's just, it's incredible. It is. And there's, just something about the energy in the air out there that just feels different in California. Yeah. So this has been great, Mark. So the last question, if you could go back at any point in your life when the younger Mark would have needed some advice or encouragement, when would that have been? And what would you say to him?
Yeah, that would be when I was 8, when my parents separated. And I still remember it now. I remember being in my sister's bedroom, and my mum came in, and she said, "Mark and Jenny, I need to speak to you about something." And then my dad came in as well, and she basically said that she didn't love my dad anymore, and that she was leaving. And I remember that just crushed my little heart when I was 8. And my dad's never been an aggressive man, and I remember him walking out, and he punched a hole through my bedroom door. And that's the only ever time I've ever seen my dad be aggressive once, just through pain. And I think, you know, that whole moment of when my parents divorced, it really did break me a lot, and I come for it. So I think, you know, if I was to go back in time, I would take my 8-year-old hands, and I'd look myself in the eye. And I would say to my little self, and I've actually done this, Tom, because it's actually a healing process when you can actually go back and revisit some of your childhood and actually
inner child work.
Yeah, exactly. Speaking to the little boy that I was, and even in the last couple of years, I've done this little elements. You know, I have done a lot of healing, but you know, the conversation I'd be saying to my little self is the fact that life is a mosaic of the brutal and the beautiful. It does hurt. It does sting. There is pain. There is loss. There is setback. But Mark, all these things will help shape you. And the reason why you've gone through this is so that you can reach and you can speak and you can give strength and you can give courage and you can give hope to those that are going to come after you experiencing the same pain, difficulty, and challenge. But you're going to be able to rescue them, help them, persuade them, encourage them, heal them, give them hope. And, you know, for me, that's what I would say to my younger self. Because while there's certain things in life that we wish had never happened to us, I think we all can acknowledge that often it's the things that we go through that shape who we are. And, you know, it's really true that if any of us want to achieve anything in life, Tom, then we've got to realize that we've got to be willing to suffer something in order to be able to achieve something. When I think of a skyscraper, and I think of how tall it is, I always think about how deep down its foundations must be. You know, and people nowadays, they want the skyscraper, they want the prestige, they want the accolades, they want the influence. But they don't realize what somebody has to go through in order to have the depth, to have the foundation that is able to hold that skyscraper, hold that impact, that influence. You've got to go through some things, you know, and I've gone through some things, and, you know, it takes time. It takes a lifetime maybe to even fully heal and immerse yourself out of that, you know. But for me, that's what I would be saying to my 8-year-old self is, Mark, you know, these things are going to shape you. They're going to help you have perspective, and they're not going to spoil you. Because the thing is I never forget where I came from, which is one of the reasons why I'm so inclusive on Clubhouse, because I know what it feels like to be isolated and cut off and broken and bruised and lost. Therefore, I kind of really want to make sure that I'm involving each and every person that I interact with, whether it's on Clubhouse or at the supermarket.
Well, I appreciate the opportunity to get to know you better, Mark. Thank you so much for doing this.
Thank you. It's been great.
The Path to Authenticity Authenticity proudly supports the iSpeak Media Foundation, advancing media literacy education through an evolving series of outreach programs within the communities that need it most. For more information, visit iSpeakMedia.org. Alright, there you go, Mark Sefton. Check out his One Thing Room on Clubhouse. If you're not on Clubhouse and you'd like to check it out, email me at thepathtoauthenticity@gmail.com and I'll send you an invitation. It's an invitation-only platform. I don't know if they did that just to have a little cachet or what, but, you know, someone invites you to Clubhouse. So I hope you enjoyed that conversation. I did. So please check out the website, thepathtoauthenticity.com. Trying to do all sorts of new stuff on there. If you enjoy listening to the show, please take the time to leave a rating or a review at Apple Podcasts or Podchaser. Whatever it is they allow you to do at whatever platform you use, I'd appreciate any support you're willing to give. I want to thank the band Punk Rock Opera, whose music you hear throughout the show. Their songs are used with permission from the artist and under a Creative Commons license. Thank you to our sponsors, The Manor and Windrose Recovery, Her Escape Vortex. If you're interested in conducting a retreat and you need a place to do it, check out thepathtoauthenticity.com/Her Escape Vortex. Thank you to Wendy Chin at Equivox for digital support and just being an all-around great human being. And as always, The Path to Authenticity is proud to support the iSpeak Media Foundation. Got lots of good stuff coming your way. I don't say this enough, but I recognize that there are so many options for you to spend your time. Other podcasts, television, whatever it is. There are a lot of different ways you could do it, so it means a lot to me that you would take the time to listen to this show. So I appreciate you. Anyway, I hope you guys have a great week. Be nice. Desert for days and days.
We need a guitar player.
This episode was brought to you by Equivox. For digital marketing or web design services, visit Equivox.com.